We're starting Sefer Vayikra this week. Korbanot, Kohanim, Mishkan. And very often people are kind of like, we're leaving the good stories behind. And there's really, Sefer Vayikra is not about stories. There's maybe one or two stories in all of Sefer Vayikra. But there are very deep ideas that are hidden in the Korbanot. And I'm going to share with you one tonight. Before we go there, I want to dedicate this year in memory of Daniel Peretz, Daniel Shimon Ben Arav Daron and Sharon Peretz. If you want to see his picture, you can come over afterwards. I think we owe all these young men a tremendous debt of gratitude. They are the reason that we can sit here comfortably and learn Torah. Can you destroy an idea? You keep talking about on the day after, when the dust settles on this war, we have to destroy Hamas. I hear what people say when they talk about removing Hamas as a security threat from Gaza, or removing Hezbollah from southern Lebanon. But can you really destroy Hamas? And as long as one terrorist is living anywhere, and he's starting a new cell of Hamas, and you haven't destroyed Hamas. We learned this after World War II, Nazism didn't die. You can see this clearly in Lebanon. Terror is not destroyed. It's alive and well, unfortunately, in the world in many different places. So can you destroy it? Not so sure. But there is one point that seems to suggest the opposite. And that is Mechiyas Amalek. We have a mitzvah to destroy Amalek. You have to wipe out every last man, woman, and child, every animal. In fact, many of the authorities struggle with this mitzvah. And the Gemara says that has Shaul HaMelech, allegorically, saying to Akash Baruch Hu, through the vestige of his debate with Shmuel HaNavi, you know, we have a halacha of Egla Rufa. If I find a body in between two cities, right? It has to bother us that we've killed that one person died. So how can you not care about the children of Amalek? How can you not care about their animals? Right? So how do you understand this? Right? And just so you understand that this is not an abstract idea, this week, one of the top five Hamas commanders was taken out by the Israeli army. It took them weeks to locate him and to pick the right time for the mission. There were a number of times, apparently, where they were good to go, and then they realized there were civilians there. They had to wait until they knew exactly where he was. They apparently used something like 20 tons of bunker buster bombs to destroy the tunnel system he was in. And one of the reasons why, if you remember, they weren't sure right away whether he was killed, and then it took American intelligence to be able to confirm it, right, was because he was under this ground. You think about the energy that Israel expended to find, track down, and destroy this terrorist. It seems a little excessive. Unless, of course, he's a Malik. And then it might be a mitzvah d'oraisa. So we're not really going to get into the question of, does a Malik exist today, except in passing? But it's an interesting question, right? Why is the response to a Malik so harsh? Can you think of another people that did terrible things to us that one would think we have a responsibility to destroy? Mitzrayim. Not only are you not obligated to destroy Mitzrayim, but in fact, if you see a Mitzri and his donkey is struggling under his load, Pasuk Dvarim, then you have a mitzvah to help him out. Why? Anybody know how the pasuk ends? Because you were guests in this country. They took you in. Now, when you think about it, that's a ridiculous comment. They took us in? Like, seriously? They threw our babies into the Nile River. And yet, for some reason, Mitzrayim doesn't deserve the same obliterating response that Amalek does. Now, we've mentioned this before. There are Mefarshim who point to a very obvious difference between Amalek and Mitzrayim. Anybody remember what it is? Pardon?
Who they worship.
Nope.
The Egyptians had a reason to be afraid.
The Egyptians had a reason. The Egyptians, the whole story of anti-Semitism in Egypt begins, right? That Paro sees that Bnei Israel, Vayibu, Vayishatsu, Vayibu, Paru, Vayishatsu, Vayibu, Ma'od, Ma'od. Right? They multiplied. And he says, Pen Yerbam, Venosav Kamu Asunenu, right? Yalab Banu. They're gonna rebel against us. So they were scared. There's a large multitude, we've got to do something about it, we've got to subjugate them. There was at least a logic, there was a reason that they did what they did, even though it was evil. But Amalek? Amalek had no reason. When you see pure hatred, anti-Semitism, for no reason, that defies logic, Soloveitchik suggests that's one of the two indicators, but that's the Zera of Amalek. I'm going to suggest to you a different idea tonight. Right? It's a different understanding. Right? By the way, along these lines, interesting question. You have a chiv to destroy Amalek, right? Somebody comes and wants to be Magai. He wants to convert to Judaism. But he's from Amalek. Can you convert an Amalekite to Judaism? Right? So, there's a lot going on here tonight. Right? So, the Eliezer Rebbe says, no, you can't do it. Right? Okay. Right? And one could make a case based on the Medrash Tanchuma. You're right. Okay? Rabbi Eli says, but it's very easy to find. Where's the Parsha of Amalek we're going to read the Shabbos? The end of Parsha? Kiteitze. So if you look in the Tanchuma, Tanchuma is a different kind of Medrash, a little later. It's a collection of different Midrash. So very often, if you know there's something in the Medrash, but you can't find it, it's good to look in the Medrash Tanchuma. The other thing that makes the Medrash Tanchuma unique, if you're looking for an idea of Amalek, you will not necessarily find it in the Medrash Rabbe on Kiteitze. It might be in Parshat Noach. So unless you know where something is, it's much less organized. Tanchuma was more organized, took different ideas. It's much more according to the Parsha, so it's easy to find. And at the end, I think Halacha Yudbet, all the way at the end of Kiteitze, and it says, "This Tani B'Shem Rabbi Lai, Shvua Nishba Kadosh Baruch Hu." Shem swore. Va'amar Yemini Yemini Kisi Kisi Yavo Gerim Kolumot Alam Ani Makabla. If Gerim comes from the nations of the world, I'll accept it. We're not an exclusive religion. We're not saying that people can't become Jewish they want. We're not an ethnocentric religion, right? But I will never accept a ger from Amalek. And that, and he quotes, Af David Asakein, Shneimar Vayomer David Lanar Magid Eimi Zeata Vayomer Ben Ish Ger Amalek Yanochi. Now, what's the story it's referring to? Shaul HaMelech is dying. He throws himself on his own sword, along with Yonatan's son, because they realize the Plishtim are surrounding them. And he doesn't want to give the Plishtim the ability to kill him and hang him and whatever else they're going to do. Because he knows that'll demoralize the Jewish people. So he throws himself on his sword. But throwing yourself on a sword is not so easy. And it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to die right away. So, Tafasoti Ayetzev, he says. The agony has caught me. I'm in pain. And there's a boy there watching this. And he says to the boy, right, who might have been a helper or not, help me die. And this boy, and then he says to him, to let the world know that the Plishtim didn't kill me. So this Nar is a Nar Amaleki. He's an Amaleki kid. Right? And he ends up going to David HaMelech. That's an interesting story. Why he gets there could be seeking reward. Interesting question. So he comes to tell David HaMelech that Shaul, the protagonist, has been trying to kill him, is dead. And maybe he thinks he's going to get a reward. So David HaMelech says, well, who are you? Where are you from? He says, I'm the son of an Amaleki, right? Possibly an Amaleki gear. What does David HaMelech do with him? Remember, he honored Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech asked him to do this. And he listened to him. And he did what Shaul HaMelech asked him to do. And then he goes to David HaMelech. What does David HaMelech do? He kills him. How can he kill him? Like he did a chesed. Why would he kill him? Because he's a Amalek. And you have to destroy a Amalek. You can't accept a ger from a Amalek. The Rambam, however, has a very different opinion. The Rambam, in Hilchos, where would you find this? Where in Shoftim? Hechos Malachim. Okay, Malach Mashiach, Amalek, right? So in Perek Vav, Halacha Dalet, he says like this, right? Aval Shiva Amin v'Amalek, Shelo Ishlimu, Ein Menichin Mehem Neshama. If they don't make shalom with us, when we come to attack Eretz Israel, to take Eretz Canaan, so you don't leave anybody alive. Shenemar came to say, Lakom Rak Me'arei Amim Lo Techayev Kol Neshama. V'cheinu Omer Ba'amalek, Timchev Techa Amalek, it says that to destroy Amalek. U'min'ayin she'eino medaber, Ela Ba'elu Shelo Yishlimu. Shenemar Lo Hayta Ir Asher Yishlim Adonai Yisrael Bilti Achivi Yoshev Givon. Right, the Givonites are the only ones who made peace, which means that the Amalekites didn't make peace. So says the Rambam, but if they had made peace, you wouldn't have had to kill them. Michlal says, Shalchu lehem l'sholem v'lo kibbut. So the Rambam says, because even Amalek, B'nai Israel sent an offer to make peace, which means that they could accept Shev Mitzvah Noach. And if you accept an Amalekite, and not kill him if he accepts Shev Mitzvah Noach, then for sure you can accept an Amalekite who wants to give you and accept all the mitzvahs. Right? And the Ravid, who has difficulty with this, is quoted also by the Kesef Mishnah. The author of the Kesef Mishnah was Rav Yosef Karo, the Shulchan Aruch, right? We take him pretty seriously. First of all, Ravid Zesh Shibush, Ela Shiachal Omar Yishlimu L'Kabbal HaMitzvos. Right, the only way that you could let them live, right, is if they were mekabel mitzvos, right? And he says that this is only talking about Shiva Amin, but Amalek you can't possibly do this with. So he sides with Rabbi Lai in the Midrash, but you can't accept the gear. Elashif Shaluton, right? You could say that the Rambam is correct. Shebichlau ishlimuhu kabbalah Shiva mitzvos. Sheim kivlu aleim shev mitzvahs, arei yatsu michlal shiva amin, u'michlal amalek, v'reim kivnei noach hakshev. Right? If a person accepts shiva mitzvahs b'nei noach, they're no longer considered amalek. By the way, can somebody bring me a proof from the Gemara that we know that we have at least one instance where a person was a ger who came from Zera Amalek and became a big rabbi? It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. Ah, right? Mibnei banav shel Haman lamdu Torah b'bnei Brak, the Gemara says. The descendants of Haman learned Torah in B'nei Brak. Who are we talking about? All the Mepharshim agree? Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was descended, so it must be. And the Rambam bases himself on this Gemara. He says it must be that you could have a gear from Amalek. Rabbi Akiva, according to the Gemara, came from Amalek. Right? By the way, what would Rabbi Lai say about this Gemara? How would he explain that if you can't accept the gear from Amalek? So there are two possibilities. One possibility is Enochinami. Right? Rabbi Lezer didn't want to accept Rabbi Akiva into these matters. Rabbi Shua was Mekabelin. The other possibility is that there are two Girsos in the Gemara there. The other Girsos is not B'nai Haman. He's descended from B'nai Naaman. Naaman was the general, the Assyrian general or Aramean general, right? Who basically Elisha saved from leprosy and he converted to Judaism. And so that's not a Amalek, it's not an issue. What is this machlokas? What does it mean? Accept the gear, don't accept the gear. You're supposed to destroy a Amalek. Destroy a Amalek. Why would we have such a discussion? And last question. Sefer Vayikra. How many different types of korbanot are there? Anybody know? Four or five. Why do I say four or five? And they're all mentioned in this week's parsha, right? You have an ola, whole burnt offering, okay? An ola can be brought for three different reasons. It can be brought as a nedava, as a, you know, I feel like something happened, I want to bring a whole burnt offering, right? It can be brought as a chiyuv, like the korban olat ha'riyah, which I offer up when I come up for the chagim. And it can also be kapara. You can bring an ola to atone for mistakes that you made, like a bittul mitzvah, to say. If you realize I haven't been wearing tzitzis, I feel bad about it, I want to do something about it, you bring a korban ola. Okay? You don't bring a chatas because it's not something you did wrong, it's just something you didn't do right. Also, a lava nita klase, but we'll leave that aside. So that's one type of korban ola. Then you have a korban mincha. Korban mincha, in some instances, right, first of all, it's also, you can bring it as a nedava, as a voluntary offering. it can atone for certain chataim, right? Also a bitul asay, right? It's an easier carbon because it's less expensive. It's a vegetable offering, whatever, right? Or it could be an obligation, like, can anybody give me a famous carbon mincha that's an obligation?
Shuras.
Pardon?
Shuras.
Which carbon?
Omer.
Carbon Omer, very good, right? Carbon mincha. So we have the Ola and the mincha. Then we have a third carbon, carbon shlamim. Carbon shlamim is mostly associated with things like birchas hagomel, right? And there are only two instances. It could be in the dava, like I was saved from a car accident, I want to bring a carbon, you bring carbon shlamim, right? And it can also be a chiyuv, like the shalmei chagiga there, carbon shlamim that you bring, you know, for the festival. But there's no, shlamim doesn't do kapara. It's not for a chet. And then you have a fourth, right? We have the ola, we have the mincha, we have the shlamim. What's the fourth? Carbon chatas. And when I say the fourth and not the fifth, carbon chatas and asham. Now these are carbonot that you bring for a lotase, for something you did wrong. You ate a cheeseburger, right? By accident, you bring in carbon chatas. Right? You ate chametz on Pesach, you didn't realize it? You bring korban chatas. When you bring korban asham? And that's what I want to talk about tonight. I want to talk a little bit about the korban asham. What's the korban asham? Okay? There are six, possibly seven instances where we offer a korban asham. Anybody know the easiest way to find them? Unless you know the Mishnayos?
I know it's a Shavua Shav.
Pardon?
Shavua Shav.
Nope. That's not a korban asham, yeah?
Kurayos.
Pardon?
Kurayos.
Nope. Kurayos. So now I know that nobody here says korbanos in the morning. Yeah? You were going to say that?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you open up a siddur, okay? By the way, I just want to say this. Make a plug for this. You know, there's a very old tradition to say korbanos every morning. And the reason they instituted this tradition was because we've forgotten what korbanos are. If there was a time you were going to sort of work on this custom, this would be the time, during Sefer Vayikra. Okay? There's a section. By the way, I have timed myself saying this with Kavana. The whole thing takes about 6 minutes. Let's say you don't want to do it every day. Let's say you want to go to it every week. If you go through it every week, there'll still be way more than you've ever gone through it before. And you will learn a lot about Karbanos. And I want to suggest, whether using a Koren sitter or an art school sitter, is a great way to just get some basic halachos of Karbanos. Basic ideas to know what a korban asham is. So if you look towards the end of the korbanos, right, this comes straight out of the fifth parak in Zvachim, right? Zivchei shalmei tzibur va'ashamot. Ve'eluhein ashamot. Okay? So these are the ashamot. And it lists the six instances where you see a korban asham. Hashem gzeilot, Hashem mila. What's an Hashem gzeila? Hashem gzeila is, I didn't actually go and steal something. I have something in my house. And I don't return it. I don't know, you came to my house, you left your, I don't know, your really nice new Janssen knapsack. And then later you start asking around, did anybody see my knapsack? I didn't actually steal it from you, but it's in my house, I'm not getting it back. So that's gezel. But it's not quite an act of gezel, right? It's something I didn't do. Me'ila. An asham me'ila means that there's something that I'm using that really is set aside for hektesh. Right, so I'm not going into the base of mikdash and machrit the base of mikdash, but I'm not using something the way I should be. I'm not doing what I should be doing. Right, Hashem shifcha charufa. Shifcha charufa is, again, I don't want to spend 10 minutes, just 30 seconds, but basically, if a woman is a shifcha, right? So a Jew, a regular person, can't marry a shifcha. An eved kanani can marry a shifcha. But if a woman is free, right, so then a Jew can marry her. What if two partners buy an eved, right? There's a woman, she's stolen money, she can't pay it back, like whatever the deal is. So they say, you know what, she has to raise $100,000, I'll take 3 years of her services on Mondays and Tuesdays, you take 3 years of her services on Wednesdays and Thursdays, and together we'll cover her debt and fine. So 3 years she's an eved. And then after a year, you say, you know what, she's great. She comes, cleans my husband. I feel bad. I'm going to free her. I'm going to let it go. But the other partner says, well, I'm not going to let it go because she's cleaning my house and I don't have anybody else. Then, you know, so she's half free and half a shifcha. Right? So among the many problems that raises, she can't get married. She can't marry a free person because she's still a shifcha. right? But she can't marry an Eved because, right? She can't marry a regular Eved because she's also free. So she can only marry a similar Eved in her situation, right? Without getting into the details. So what happens if she's betrothed to such an Eved, and then a regular Jew doesn't realize it, and he comes and sleeps with her, right? He betroths her and he sleeps with her, or whatever he does. So that's a particular chait for which he has to bring korban asham. He may not have realized it, right? So it's not that you did something wrong, it's that you didn't do the right thing. You didn't check, whatever it might be, right? Okay, right? Asham nazir. If you're a nazir, what's the biggest deal that you have when you're a nazir? You're not supposed to become tummy, right? And somehow you got exposed to tummy mace. You didn't do it on purpose, right? Because then you're bringing korban, right? You just, you weren't careful. You know, you were driving with some guys, you forgot to ask where they're going, next thing you know, you're in a cemetery, and they throw a body in because you got to take them for kavura. I don't know, whatever the case is. So that's a very specific instance. You didn't necessarily do anything wrong, but something bad happened, right? You didn't do the right thing. So you bring an asham nazir, right? And there's six instances where you bring a korban asham. So it's interesting. A korban asham is basically also, right, you bring to get kapara for a mistake that you made. What's the fundamental difference between a korban chatas and a korban asham? Why do you need two korbanos? What's the basic difference between them, right? Okay. Now, it's interesting. If you look a little more into the details of the difference between a korban chatas and a korban asham, when you bring a korban chatas, so a chatas is also a mistake that you made, the averos for which you bring these korbanot are very different. Like, for example, let's say you accidentally eat on Yom Kippur. That's a pretty serious thing. Like, you just forget it's Yom Kippur. And you sit down, and you're having a burger in the middle of, like, after Kol Nidre. I mean, that's... If you did that on purpose, by the way, what's the onus for that? Kares. That's as bad as it gets. A Beis Din can't find you guilty, but Kadosh Baruch Hu does big time. Right? You eat chametz, you're sitting at the Seder, and you're just really hungry, and you open up the drawer, and you see there's, like, you know, a salami sandwich that you made a couple of days, you forget. Ah, you're so excited and you eat it. Eat chametz on Pesach, iser kares. So if you did that by accident, you bring korban chatas. An asham you bring because the knapsack's in your house and you didn't give it back. You could still give it back. You just haven't done it yet. Okay. So which is worse? You would think chatas is worse. But here's where it gets interesting. Korban chatas, you could bring a korban chatas that's worth a ma'a, which is a very small amount of silver. Okay. But for korban asham, it has to be... By the way, there's no prescribed amount. That's just the example the Gemara gives. But you could bring a korban chatas. If you could find a korban that's even less money, you could bring that too. But an asham has to be worth at least 2 slaim of kesef. Now, a sela kesef is 48 ma'ot. That means that since you can bring a chatas for a ma'a, right, and that's 1/48 of a sela, and you have to bring 2 slaim for the... That means it's 96 times. So I can bring a chatas for $100. I'd have to bring $9,600 I'd have to spend to bring an asham. So you would think that an asham there is a much more serious thing. It's much more stringent. And yet the chait of the asham is much lighter. It's not stringent at all. So how do we understand this disparity? Right? What exactly is the difference between an asham and a chatas? Now, it could be, by the way, that the reason that we take an asham so seriously is precisely because people might treat the mistakes of a korban asham more lightly. So in order to, you know, make sure that, you know, that you won't blow off these mitzvot, so we make it more serious. It also could be because the chait of an asham, the mistake you make, maybe the person doing that sort of thing needs to be woken up more. It needs to be more of a hitorut, an arousal. So we do that by making it more stringent in certain ways, right? But there is another way to look at it, and this is where it gets interesting. This is the Ramban. The Ramban says, what's the difference in a korban chatat and an asham? This is, by the way, in Perek Hay, Pasuk Tedvav, okay, 5:15. He says... And it's worth reading this Ramban. It's not a long Ramban. We'll give you some other details about how you understand the parasha. But matan yesh shema korban echad chatat v'shema echad asham. Why do we need 2 different korbanot? One of them is called a chatat, and one of them is called an asham, when they're both coming to forgive or to gain atonement for mistakes that we make, right? Regarding things that we shouldn't do, that we did. So he says, right? Ve'ein lomar shiyehei mipnei chomer achet. You can't say because one of them is more stringent than the other. Ki ne'amitzorah, one of the six korbanot asham is the asham mitzorah. Right, a person who, let's say, spoke Lashnara, becomes, gets tzara'at, at the end he's done, he has to bring korbanot, he brings a korban chatas and a korban asham. Right? Mevi shnei korbanot shema echad chatat v'sheni asham. So it can't be that one is more, because bring it for the same thing. V'nireh be'inai, ki shem asham more al davar gadol, right? Asher ha'onsho ha'ovro yitchayev liyot shamein. When a person does whatever it is that requires a korban asham, it's like there's something that's destroyed in him. There's a mistake that he's making that's destroying him. It's causing his soul to become desolate. Milashon heshimei melukim v'yashamu naot midbar v'chein te'ashem shomron ki marta belokea. When the Navi says that the Shomron, the capital of the northern kingdom, has become desolate. It's going to be destroyed because it rebels against the Kodesh Baruch Hu, right? So it's a serious mistake, whatever they're making, that destroys your soul, right? And the two examples that are brought, Rav Nevenzel talks about this, in Shoftim, in the story of Pelegesh Begiva, when there's this tribal war between the men of Binyamin, whatever the story is there. So the Pasuk says, Kolea, right? These slingers, they never miss. They can be kolea la'sara, they can hit a hair, right? Okay? They will not miss. So chait is where you miss the mark, like lo yachti, right? On the other hand, Hoshea Navi says, te Hashem shomron ki marata belokea. Shomron will be wiped out, will be destroyed, which is exactly what happens. The city gets destroyed and is never rebuilt. It's not like Yerushalayim. Shomron will never be rebuilt. They found the ruins of Shomron, right? The area is called Shomron. The city will never be rebuilt, right? There's something about what happened in the Shomron that needs pure destruction, right? It's something worse than the transgression of a chait, and it warrants destruction, right? So the Chinuch, the Sefer Chinuch, you will remember. Thanks. The Sefer HaChinuch, by the way, just as an aside, we opened up the yeshiva, so my wife did a very smart thing. She used to have an issue. I used to have these big bookcases in my living room. It was filled floor to ceiling with Sfarim. All the Sfarim, I had a big Yetzirah of Sfarim. You know, I would get a Sefer, get excited about it. I'm not sure I ever learned all the Sfarim, but they were there, right? I had everything. I had the Ritva, Chadash, the Rabbeinu David, the Rashba, the Ran, the whole thing.
Wow.
What are you doing? Right? And, but you know, you have like Sfarim on the top shelf. You never get to them. They're collecting dust. And, you know, on Pesach, you go and you want to, my wife said, the top shelves really don't need to be dusted for Pesach. You haven't touched them. So we opened up the yeshiva and we needed Sfarim. And we didn't have the money to buy a library. So my wife said, you know, why don't you take some of your Sfarim to the yeshiva. I'll help you. And that's how we got all the Sfarim out of my living room. And every once in a while, I'm like, you're in love, and I find a sefer of mine, right? So I was looking for the chinuch, and I couldn't find another sefer chinuch, so I found the minchas chinuch. And this minchas chinuch was given to me by a rabbi of gold, my bar mitzvah. And, you know, I've now taken it back into my possession. But so it's a big schus to, and I'm still in touch with him. He's in his 90s, can I know that? And Sefer HaChinuch says the following. Sefer HaChinuch wrote this sefer about mitzvot for his son who's becoming bar mitzvah. Amazing. And he says to him, Vadimayon she'anu osim Vadimayon she'anu osim nikva benafshoteinu adavar leolam. Right? The things that we think affect who we are. Say, al tachshov bni, don't think, my son. Litfos al dvarai v'lomar Lama Yitzavelam, this is the mitzvah, by the mitzvah Tet Zayin, Shvias Etzem B'Pesach. Like there's a mitzvah, the Etzem Lotish B'Rubo, you have to eat the carbon Pesach without any broken bones. It's a whole deep idea there. So he says to his son, who's 12 years old, think about that. This 12-year-old kid, got the lunches from Mitzvah with the chinuch. It's not fair. But okay. Al tachshov ni letfos al dvarai lomar lama yitzaveh lana Hashem yizbarach lasot kol eilo zikaruro to anes. Why do we need so many different mitzvahs to remember the Yitzias Mitzrayim? Ve'lo b'zikaron echad yaleh adavar b'vachshvotainu. Just remember Mitzrayim. Why do you need all these different mitzvahs? Even lo yishakach mipizareinu. It won't be forgotten. Da. No. Ki lo mechochmatit b'seini al zeh. Right? Ve'ata b'ni bina v'shim'a zot ve'ateh oznecha u'shma alamdecha le'wil b'torah mitzvah. I'm going to teach you how to be successful in Torah and Mitzvahs. This is a deep idea. Da, no. Ki ha'adam nif'al kefi pu'lotav. You are the sum of your actions. V'libo, v'chol machshavotav tamid achar ma'asav. What you think, who you are in your soul, is impacted by the things you do. Shuvosek b'hem, whatever the things you do are. Im tovim ra, whether for good or for bad. V'afilu rasha gamur. Person is a totally wicked person. You're a bum, to quote Rav Noam. Gamul bilvavo, you're through and through. You're a maneuver. V'chol yeitzer machshavot libo rakha kol yom. All you do is plot evil things. Im ye'areh rucho, v'yastim ishtadluto. But if you will be aroused, v'asko batmada b'torah, and you'll start learning Torah, and you'll start doing mitzvahs, I feel it's all Shem Shabbat. You're not doing it for the right reason. You just realize it'll make you look good. Miyad yateh latov. Doing good makes you become better. Klal. Umitok shalol lishma bal lishma. Even if it's for the wrong reasons. Ubekoach ma'asav yamita yetzar. The way to destroy the yetzar is just to do good things. Amazing. Ki acharei ha'pulot nimshachim ha'levavot. Our mind follows what we do. V'yafilu im yeh adam tzadik gamur, but if you're tzadik, u'levavo yashar, and your mind is straight, and you learn Torah, v'tamim chafetz b'torah u'mitzvot, and you love Torah, and you want to do mitzvot, im yasok tamid b'dvarim shel dofi, but if you're all the time doing things that are stupid, waste of time, right? Im kol esko tamid kol hayom v'oto omanot, Yeshuv lizman min hazmanim mitzidkat libo liyot chashav. If all you do, and he gives an example of this, right? And he says, Al yaftichacha yitzcha lomar achrei hayot libi shalem, since my heart is pure and I've learned a lot of Torah, ma efsed yesh bi ki et aneg lefamim betanugai, betanugai anashim l'shevet b'shvakim. What's the big deal? Sit with my friends, hang out in the marketplace, in the mall, li tlotzetim aleitim, to be bum with the bums, to talk nonsense. Shein mevin, even things that don't require a chatas. He shamer mitnehem painti laked birshetam rabim, right? Shatu mitoch kach kos peralein, because they'll drink from the wine of iniquity and they'll become poisoned. This is an advertisement for what to be careful of when you go to the University of Maryland. Pleasure, right? What we do affects who we are. You're struggling with your ratzon, do good. You feel like tefillin's a waste of time, you haven't figured it out yet. Understand that if you wear tefillin, you put on, you do these things, they will impact you. Okay, let's say that's true, right? The flip side's also true. A person can do such bad things that he can no longer do tshuva. Give me an example of a person who, according to the Rambam, cannot do tshuva. Paro. This is in Hilchos Tshuva, Bergvav. Right? The Rambam says, and without getting, it's getting late, so without the whole discussion there of why Moshe Rabbeinu keeps going back to Paro, if Hashem is determined he can't do Tshuva, there's some interesting perushim on that. You can get to a point where you're no longer capable of fixing it. Right? And the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva says this very clearly. Right? He says, Efshar Sheyachtia, this is in Perek Vav Alacha Gimel. Efshar Sheyachti Adam Chet Gadol. Person can do tremendous mistakes. O Chataim Arbeh, or he can do many things that are wrong. Right? Ad Sheyitein Adin Lifnei Dayan Emet, until Hashem calls him to justice. Shemonin Mimenu Hatshuva. Ve'in Menichin Lo Reshut Lashuv. He doesn't have, he's not giving permission. Hashem will not allow him to do tshuva. You don't belong in the world anymore. Your soul has become so corrupted, your actions are so evil. Rather, such a person should die and be destroyed in the iniquities that he has. And then the Rambam goes on here. Right? Adolf Hitler. Marwan Issa. Yichya Sinwar. A person can reach such a level of evil that they don't have the capacity to do tshuva anymore. That the world is better off without them. Right? And in that case, they have to be destroyed. They have to destroy them. And that is Amalek. Now the question is, what destroys our souls? It doesn't have to be Paro. You don't have to be that severe a case. This is an unbelievable pasuk in Mishlei. Rav Nevinzel quotes this. Perek Yudchet pasuk Tet, Gam mitrape bimalachto, achu lebal mashchit. A person who just, he's like sloth in his work. He's not putting in the effort. He lazes around. He's a partner in destruction. Right? Inaction can be just as destructive as action. I'll give you an example, right? You stay in a room without oxygen, you're not doing anything wrong. But if you stay in a room long enough without oxygen, you're going to die. If a person doesn't eat, he's not eating treif, he's just not eating. If you don't eat, you're going to die. So inaction can destroy a person, right? And you can't always fix it later. Now what's interesting about this, and the example that's given by Chazal is, what is the ultimate example of something that we don't do that destroys our soul? Ultimate example. By not doing this, it destroys your neshama. It messes you up.
Studying Torah?
Yeah, Bittul Torah. And what's interesting about this is, when it comes to the physical world, it doesn't matter what your intent is. You know, have an intent or don't have an intent. You intended not to eat, you didn't intend it as a result. When it comes to the spiritual world, the intent actually makes a difference. If you have the ability to learn Torah, if you have the ability to do these mitzvot and you don't do them, when I was at certain points in my army experience, if I didn't daven properly, I have a pretty good excuse. When I get up to Shemayim, if I didn't have enough kavana, I got what to say. But if you're living and learning in the old city of Yerushalayim, and soon now the weather's starting to get nice, you can go up on the roof and you can say Berkot HaShachar, the accounting you're going to have to give for not doing this is much more serious. And it messes you up inside. So if you could be learning Torah and you don't do that, it destroys the soul. Right? The Pasuk in Bamidbar says, right, Ki Dvar Hashem Baza, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, Zesh Efshalo La'asok B'Torah Ve'Noseh. A person who could be learning Torah and doesn't learn Torah. There is another way to destroy your soul. There's another way to do something which is not really something you're doing, but just something you're not doing, that's so destructive to who we are. By the way, what did we say? What's the essence of the soul? The essence of the neshama is Ratzon, right? When we talk about the soul, right, I don't have a soul, I am a soul. The essence of the soul is the Ratzon. What destroys your Ratzon? What messes you up, right? When you don't fill yourself with meaning and purpose and figuring out what Hashem wants of you in this world, then that has negative side effects. What's the other thing? That if you don't do it, it messes you up. This is fascinating. And can anybody think of an example? What is it that if you don't do, it messes you up? Anybody? This is actually very interesting. Pardon? No. Although that's true. Nope. Pasuk in Yechezkel. Yechezkel Navi is describing, okay, why Sodom was destroyed. This is a pasuk in Yechezkel. This is not some, Hasidic Baba Maisa. This is Mamash Yechezkel Navi. This is in Yechezkel Perek Tet Zayin Pasuk Memtet. Hine ze haya avon Sodom achotech. Right? Yechezkel is talking to Yerushalayim and he's saying to the Jewish people, what are you doing? Hashem's going to destroy you. You're messing it up. So you would think he's talking about Avodah Zarah, Shvichas Dam, you're murdering, you're adultering. No. This was the iniquity of Sodom, your sister. Gaon shivat lechem, right? V'shalvat hashkei tayala. She had peace of mind. She had plenty of you know, storehouses full of bread, everything she needed. But she never gave to the poor. She didn't do chesed. What destroyed the soul of the cities of Sodom was what they didn't do. Was the chesed that they didn't do. Fascinating. So you can, by not doing what you need to be doing, right, it can destroy you. And that's not just about Bittul Torah, it's also about chesed. Right? There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, this is an amazing Mishnah. Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Almost done. Mishnah in Sanhedrin says, Mishalaka Vashina. If a person did something, and, you know, according to, seems that this is something that's in Issur Kares, but you did it by accident, and you got in trouble, and you got Malkos, right? Okay. And then you went out and you did it again. You got warned again, you did it again. That's a very serious thing. You did something bad. You got into some Malkos. They lashed you. And you went out, you got warned not to do it, and did it again. There's debate in the Gemara whether this is after twice or three times, right? What did they do with you? What did they do with you? Right? You did this terrible thing. They gave you lashes. You did it again. They gave you life. They did it again. So you're not taking Beis Din seriously. So what does Beis Din do? Machnisin oto l'kipa. They put him in a cell. A tiny little cell. According to some Mefarshim, it's a cell that you can't stretch out in. U'machilin oto se'orin. And they feed him barley. Ad shekreso mitpakat. Rashi says, until he eats barley, which expands inside you, until you explode. In other words, they kill you. Now that's unbelievable. How can Chazal come up with something like this? So Rashi says this has to be. Rashi says, "Vaday Allah l'Moshe Mitzrayim." We couldn't come up with such a thing. This could only be Midorah, only the Torah, only Hashem could tell us to do such a thing, right? But what's fascinating about this is, right? Why? How can we? So the Gemara says there must be a remez. There must be an allusion to this somewhere in the Torah. This unbelievably difficult. Where is the allusion to this? Amarish Lakish. Timotet Rashara. Right? It's a pasuk from Tehillim. And the pasuk in Tehillim says, right? Timotet Rashara. Literally, that evil, the evil is the one that'll kill the Rasha. Right? But the word Timotet doesn't mean it's going to kill him, it means he's already dead. In fact, the best example of this is the same story of Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech, right, when he's throwing himself on his sword, right, he says, Amod na alayu motetani, uses the same word. And when the Nara Maleki comes to David to say that he finished the job, so it says, Va'amotetehu. What does that mean, to motet rashara? It means a person, the wicked person's already dead. So you're not really killing a person. You're killing a person who's already dead. There's a certain type of evil that corrupts your soul to such a degree that you can't do tshuva because you're already dead even though you're living. Mm-hmm. Right? Timotet is just to finish off his death. And it's interesting, by the way, how does that pasuk end? Timotet rashara v'sonet tzadik yeshamu. Because those who hate the righteous, they are yeshamu. They're guilty, but if you follow the Ramban, they're shamen, they're destroying themselves. That's what we're seeing today. You have a culture which is sonei tzaddik. They hate good. There's just no other way to explain it. They want to destroy everything that's good in the world. Right? And killing such a Rasha is killing someone who's already dead. Right? There are things that spiritually destroy us. Like not doing what we need to do, right? Like allowing yourself to be defiled. These are things that spiritually destroy you. And by the way, and we're almost done, even worse than this, it doesn't stop with us. When we make these mistakes, it carries on way beyond us. I'll give you a great example. Take Reuven. Reuven, according to the Rashi in Parashat Vayechi, in Perek Memtet, right? Says that Reuven was supposed to be the Kohen. His descendants were supposed to be Kohanim. They were supposed to be the priests. And they're supposed to be malachim. They're supposed to be kings. Why did they lose the kingship and the kohuna? Because of one terrible act. Pachas kamayim. And if you want to look this up, you can look up the Rashi in the brachos that Yaakov gives at the end of his life in Vayechi. Because of one moment, one mistake, something he didn't do, and some say because he didn't save Yosef, not just him. He didn't just destroy him. His children, his children's children, his children's children. Can somebody give me an example? This I'll be impressed with. Can somebody give me an example of an instance where somebody, maybe even a family, did something wrong that their descendants paid for generations?
Adam.
Pardon?
Adam.
Well, Adam is true, but that's more of a Christian idea, so we're not going to go there. New? Yeah?
Shaul.
No. Well, you know what? Shaul is correct. Shaul makes a mistake, and possibly two, and all of his descendants will never become kings. That's very good. Yeah? Okay, that's also a possibility because in the Medrash, the Leviim actually lost the kohuna, but okay, yeah? Ah, that's what I was thinking of. Shanabet, right? Eli has two sons, Chofni and Pinchas, and they, it's not clear what they did, some level of corruption, right? And most likely what they didn't do. And Eli didn't apparently educate them properly. And all the children, in fact, there's a Gemara, right? The Gemara says by Eli, it's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. It's an unbelievable Gemara. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says, right? Listen to this story. It's two lines. Tanu Rabbanan Mishpacha Achata. This is a Gemara in Daf Yud Ches in Rosh Hashanah. Tanu Rabbanan Mishpacha Achata Itabi Yerushalayim. There was a family in Yerushalayim. Shehayu Meitea Meitin Bnei Yud Ches Shana. Their children would die when they turned 18. It's a terrible thing. Bauvo Diu. At Rabbi Yochum and Zakkai. So they let Rabbi Yochum and Zakkai know. They told Rabbi Yochum and Zakkai, like, what's going on here? Amar lahem shema mi mishpachat Eli atem. Maybe you're from the family of Eli. In other words, Rabbi Yochum and Zakkai lived in the time of the Mishnah. So hundreds of years later. Hundreds of years later. The impact of that mistake is felt by their children's children's children. Now, there's a good side to this, and there's a bad side to this. The good side to this is that we are the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And when we implore Hashem, when we think about Zchut Avot, that we call up sort of the merit of our forefathers, it's because deep inside of us, we were impacted by what they did. And that is there. It doesn't mean, by the way, that someone whose ancestor, you know, has some negative trait, that person is doomed. In fact, I'll prove to you it doesn't mean that, because there is actually one descendant of Reuven who becomes a melech. Anybody know which descendant of Reuven becomes a melech? This would be impressive if you knew this. Nope. He's Binyamin. Pardon? Nope. Hoshea ben Elah. Hoshea ben Elah is the last king of Shomron, the last king of Israel, and he is a direct descendant. He's from Shevet Reuven. Which means even a person from Reuven who lost the kingship is capable of overcoming that. So it is possible to overcome this. But somebody who comes from tzaddikim, he has a head start. So we have a head start. Okay, whatever that means. But it also helps me understand what's going on with Amalek. There's something that Amalek did that's so terrible that their children and children's children and children's children, they can't be fixed. That energy is just there. So that leaves us with one last question. What is this thing that is so terrible that it can't be fixed in Amalek? Anybody know? This is Beferish and Varn. Yeah?
They attacked the Asaf Seuf.
So you might think that. And there are Mepharshim who say they attacked us from the rear, they had no reason to attack us, whatever. But there's something specific that the... Do I have a Dvarim here? Yes.
They act as if there's no free will and they work only under... They think they're working only under their own God, so they do whatever they want. And
oh, you're getting close. What does it say? Do you remember what it says? End of Parsha Ki Tetzeh. What does it say? Asher korcha baderech. They happened to cross you. That's a word thinking about, but not for now. Ve'vayzaneh b'cha kol nechshalim, and they attacked the weak from the rear, nechshalim acharecha, v'ata ayef v'yageah, v'lo yarei Elohim. They had no yirat Elohim. Now this is interesting. Haman rejoices that the lottery falls in the month of Adar. Why? According to the Medrash. Why? Because he knows that Moshe Rabbeinu died in Adar. That means he recognizes the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. Amalek didn't doubt that God existed. They knew God existed. They just didn't want to listen to him. Lo yare Elokim means I'm not willing to nullify myself before the return of Hashem. And I'll prove this to you. Avram Avinu. Can't get bigger than that, right? Avram Avinu goes through 9 tests. The Mishnah Pirkei Avos says, Basara Nisyonot, he has 10 tests. Only in the 10th test does it say, Atay Yadati Ki Yirei Elokim Ata. He's only considered Yirei Elokim in awe of Hashem in the 10th test. Why? What is it about the, what is the 10th test? According to most Mefarshim, the Akedah. What is it about the binding of Isaac that makes him a Yirei Elokim? Because up until then, everything Avram does is in keeping with who he is. He saves Lot, because what's Avram's, what's the essential quality of Avram Avinu? Chesed. So he does chesed for Lot, right? Non-stop. But in the Akedah, he has to do something cruel. He has to undermine the essence of who he is. He nullifies himself before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what Yirat Elohim is. And just like, by the way, you can nullify yourself before Hashem, you can nullify yourself before your fellow human being. You can decide, what I want is less important than what I can give. Purim is about combating Amalek. How do you combat Amalek? Amalek, the person who don't want to nullify themselves before Hashem, they don't care about the other. You do the opposite. You nullify yourself before the other. You give to your fellow human being. You give Mishloach Manot and you give Matanot Levinim. That's what Purim is. And it leaves us with a final detail, which is, how do we destroy the Amalek in us? You know, it's not clear. There's a big debate about whether Amalek exists today. Sanherib confused all the nations. But even if Amalek doesn't exist today, Amalek exists on a parenthetic plane. You know? First of all, Soloveitchik says that any nation that rises up against us to destroy us is Amalek. Any nation that is Lo Yirei Elokim, that wants to destroy the Jewish people because they represent Yirat Elokim, is Amalek. And therefore, if you ask me, not only was that, by the way, I'll tell you something unbelievable. This is worth quoting. This is an unbelievable, give me 1 second, this is worth finding. Oh, no. One second. This is crazy. In 1898, Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, who was the Rav of Yerushalayim, refused, in 1898, who came to visit Yerushalayim in 1898, anybody know? Nope, the Kaiser, Wilhelm II. Now this is 1898. Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld refuses to go out to greet him, even though it means that he's missing the opportunity to make a bracha. There's a bracha you make when you see a king in the world, no matter if he's good or bad, right? He gives up this mitzvah, refuses to go out and greet him. Why? Because he had a tradition from the Gaon of Vilna that the Germans are descendants of Amalek. This is in 1898. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable, right? Any nation that rises up to destroy us because we're Jewish, because we represent the Kodesh Baruch Hu. By the way, Hitler writes this in Mein Kampf. We've spoken about this before. That's why he couldn't forgive us, because we introduced morality into the world. That's Zera Amalek. Now, whether that means that you fulfill the mitzvah of Mechias Amalek, I don't know. That's a debatable topic. There are actually some Rishonim who say you do and some who say you don't. But on an existential, on a philosophical plane, the battle against that is the battle against Amalek. Hamas, make no mistake about it. Yichya Awash, Iran today, the leadership of Iran, it's Amalek. Zera Amalek. And you can't negotiate with Amalek. There's nothing to talk about. Right? You have to destroy them. It's scary. That's the essence of what Amalek is. But how do we do tikkun for that in the world? We put our own ritzon aside. We nullify ourselves before the others. That's why there's a ruach achdut that's going through Eretz Israel. Right? The mistake of not doing is what the Korban Hashem is all about. I don't think it's an accident that the Parsha in the Torah, this year, with everything going on, where the Hashem appears, the essential chait is that when we don't do what we're meant to do, there's an entire population of the world that stood by and just watched as 6 million Jews were put into ovens. And we're seeing the same thing happening today. There are three essential groups in the world. There's the ones who are fighting evil. Some of them are in Eretz Israel and they're putting on uniforms. And some of them are overseas and they're organizing rallies and whatever it is. And then there's the group that is evil. Right? You know, the Justice for Palestine, you know, professionals who are doing on campus what they're doing and the Qataris who are funding it. That's just evil. But there's a very large group in the middle. They're just busy eating hamburgers. They're just ignoring the entire story. There's nothing. The security guard at Exeter University in England, who just the university security that just watched while Palestinian students, or whatever they call themselves, were beating up Jewish students. And that's a form of evil that's more difficult to identify. It's hard to bring them, that's a korban hashem. We have to make sure that we don't allow ourselves to become ashamim, to become desolate, to become barren. We have to think about what it is we have to do. Right now, perhaps the way we contribute to the war effort is by Limud Torah. And everybody has to struggle with what their next steps and what they'll do about that. So that's a little bit of food for thought. L'zecher nishmat Rav Daniel ben Harav Doron v'Sharon Perez. Shem yikom damo, yizechro baruch. I wish everybody a meaningful and an awesome Shabbat Zachor.